Welcome to Star News here with Kevin Clark. I am Kevin Clark.
Yes, sir.
Two big guests, Eli Manning on the Kelce's, on Super Bowl, Mahomes. Really good insight. I loved it. He's been on now three times. He brings it every single time. Legitimately one of the funniest people in media from a player perspective. I love him. And then Danny Kelly joins to talk Senior Bowl, where he is, early Super Bowl preview, and this is why we had him on, dad movies. Tons of dad movies, dad books, dad TV shows. We hit it. Here's Eli.
Looking to refresh your closet, home, or beauty routine this spring? Walmart's got all the stylish goods in one stop. From chic new looks and the latest makeup to quality furniture and tableware. Go to walmart.com/nowtrending. That's walmart.com/nowtrending for the hottest fashion, home, and beauty finds. Your style at Walmart.
There's no better feeling than a personal win, and the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you do just that. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Eli Manning, one of our favorite people. He's here with Quaker. What's going on, Eli?
Hey, how are you doing? Excited to be on. Thanks for having me.
I am so excited. There's a lot to get to. I want to start here. You're going to get asked ad nauseum about playing in the NFL with a brother on another team because of the Kelce brothers. And I want to start here. You played against Peyton three times in the regular season. Was there any gamesmanship heading into it? Were there any head games? Did he start those head games in the off season? Like, what was it like to know you were going against your brother when he knew you, you knew him, you could in theory pass things along to the defense? What was that like, Eli?
Well, you had to watch out. I remember, you know, the off season, Peyton was up in New York doing something, and we kind of got together, had a couple of my teammates, and we're all hanging out, and I kind of see Peyton over there talking with Dave Deal, or left tackle, and I'm like, what's going on here? And Dave, like, Peyton's kind of asking about our protection rules and different things, like how we're going to pick up a Mike Sam blitz. And Dave's like, I'm like, Dave, don't tell him. Like, he is a sponge. Like, anything you say, he's remembering. He will use it to his advantage. Like, this is, you got to be careful. Like, there's no talking. No talking football with him those years that we play against each other. So it'll be such a cool moment with the Kelce brothers. And I remember, like, the moment for me that was still sticks out is just sitting there, national anthem playing, and looking across, and you see your big brother, and kind of sharing that moment that you're there. You know, imagine doing that on a Super Bowl and during a Super Bowl is going to be pretty special for those guys.
How did you deal with the parents? Did you tell them anything and just say, hey, we want you to root for both of us. We want you to, don't want you to root at all. Don't wear gear. Like, how do you manage parents in that spot?
I think let them figure that out. I think the parents, you know, the fact that both Peyton and I played offense, both these
of course
two guys play on offense, you just root for a very high scoring offensive game where it's back and forth. And, you know, that for your, you know, for your kids just to make the plays when they're given the opportunities. And, I think it will be a little bit different. You know, when Peyton and I played, for the most part, it was early in the season.
Yeah.
Where, you know, there's still a game the next week and you still have a chance to make playoffs, and you're still, like, it's not the end of the world and it's not the last game of the season. I mean, this is a Super Bowl. I think it'd be hard to truly, you know, be so excited for your one kid because they win the championship and win a Super Bowl, yet your other kid is this, like, miserable, having, you know, lost the Super Bowl. Is not easy.
When I was in the tunnel after the Harbaugh Super Bowl, and the one thing I noticed was the parents went straight to the losing locker room.
Yeah.
You know, because it was interesting to me because it's like, obviously the winners get, you know, the Ravens are all celebrating and all that stuff, and the parents and the family and Tom Crean straight to the Niners locker room because that's where they needed to be.
Yeah, and obviously you feel for your kids when they go through tough times and tough moments more than you want to celebrate them for their accomplishments. So that makes a lot of sense.
Let's put you in the town square of every NFL city. Is Philly the place you would get booed the most? Is it Boston? Is it Dallas? I mean, where are we on that, Eli?
I think it's I think it's probably a mix between Philly and Boston. I don't think either one likes me too much. It was funny, years ago, I was kind of on the field pregame for Walter Payton Man of the Year. I'd won the award and the year before, so I was kind of the last one to be called. They were recognizing everyone who had won. And that year, it was the Eagles playing the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And like, so they cheered, like every single person, you know, that gets called out, they just cheered because it doesn't matter, I'm the last one. And it was just like double booing from both sides. I'm like, this is like a charity, like you're doing good in the community. I'm getting booed for both these teams. So, you know, I think it's pretty funny. I feel like with the Eagles, it's kind of like a fun loving hatred and everything going on. And was able, you know, went to the game, the playoff game the other week, and definitely, you know, brought my 11-year-old daughter. She definitely saw some new hand signals and has a few new vocabulary words to her arsenal. But, I think the Patriots obviously, you know, won a couple of Super Bowls against their team and beat them, but they had six other ones. They got plenty of Super Bowls. I think they're over it.
They're fine. Yeah, they're going to make it. They had some good times. When you watch Patrick Mahomes, is there something that in his play that you think we don't talk about enough? I mean, obviously, it's pretty hard to say anything is overlooked in this media environment and the way that he's been discussed and the way he's been at the highest level. But for someone like me, where I never played the position, I don't understand it. When you watch him, you think what?
I just think, you know, this his ability to make some of these throws when he's off balance, his feet aren't set, he's running one way, he's throwing the other way. And it just doesn't get him in trouble. He doesn't turn the ball over. I mean, these are like, I look at that throw, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a risky throw. It's like completion, like perfect pass. And I thought with the injury, that would slow down and he would miss, like he'd still try to do some of those, but he would miss it. And that might lead to some turnovers or some bad throws. But every time he had like one of those crazy off balance throws, like he made it during the game. The throws he missed were actually what I call the like easier throws, where it was a clean pocket. Mm-hmm. Like he's stepping into it and he misses some, and you're like, well, that's what happened there? That's like not like him. You never see him just missing a guy, but I guess he had time to think about it, or you think about how you're on that step. When you're just on the run, he's just being an athlete. You're not, you know, thinking about that ankle. He was able to make all those throws still.
Early prediction for this game?
Hey, you know, I don't know if it's just because of the rivalry between Giants and Eagles. It's just hard for me to pick the Eagles to win it. Have such respect for Patrick Mahomes, for Andy Reid, for Steve Spagnuolo, all on the mm-hmm. Chiefs. I think Philadelphia is playing unbelievable football. I think they've dominated through the playoffs and the regular season. Definitely deserve to be there. I think it'll be a tight game. I just think the Chiefs have been in this scenario before. They've won championships. I know the Eagles have. They don't have as many people in kind of the main core positions that have been in the Super Bowl. So I think, the Chiefs have a little advantage.
We'll get you out of here on this before we get to what we're doing with Quaker. Manning cast this year, you had Obama. You had a lot of big names. Do you get nervous? I mean, you've never done media until you retired, and now you're a media mogul. What prep do you go through to interview? Like, what is this process like for you, Eli, just learning how to do media on the fly?
Yeah, no, I don't get nervous. It was definitely a little bit different. I've answered a lot of questions dealing in New York and doing interviews. I'm much better at answering the questions than asking the question and by coming up with a good question. And so try to do a lot of prep in that and just, you know, making sure I understand, you know, some good questions and stuff that can lead to funny answers or answers that aren't too long, because I don't want to ask and all of a sudden there's exciting plays going on and some guy's giving a long, you know, boring answer to something. So just try to, you know, find out all that and have a game plan for that, yet still watch the football game and be able to analyze what's going on. So there was a lot going on. I think the fact that there is a football game to kind of distract the fans makes me, gives me a little help.
Who are we getting on next year that you haven't had on? Who's your number one bucket list guy?
You know, that last year it was a president, to get a former president.
Yep, that's so pretty good.
I think we can stay in that mold. I think there's some more former presidents that would be good, but also sure. I'm a huge Seinfeld fan. So Jerry Seinfeld or Larry David would be pretty awesome as well.
Larry David's a Jets fan, I believe.
There you go. If the Jets make it to a Monday night game, and you know, we might have our guy.
Larry David. All right, I'm looking at the camera right now. Larry David, 2023 Manning cast. We have to make it happen. Let's go. Let's get you out of here. What are you doing with Quaker?
Yeah, so I'm excited to partner with Quaker and to invite fans to share how they pre-grain before the big game for a chance to attend next year's Super Bowl in Las Vegas. So to enter the contest, fans can go over to TikTok and follow @Quaker, and they can upload their own pre-grain video sharing how they prepare with Quaker Oats. And so you can upload starting today, ending February 12th, which is Super Bowl Sunday, and use the caption #QuakerPregrain #entry. So make a fun video with Quaker Oats, post it up, and you got a chance to go to the Super Bowl next year.
Are you on TikTok, Eli?
I am not on TikTok, but I have shot a lot of videos for TikTok, but I'm not, you know, following and keeping up with everything. I know what's going on. My kids keep me updated on things that are happening, but it was fun shooting some of these kind of fun videos for Quaker on TikTok that my kids are enjoying.
My colleague Lindsay Jones, we just recorded, she was telling me that Joe Burrow is the king of TikTok. Like, he's not on it, but like all the videos, all the NFL videos, it's just Joe Burrow looking cool in the tunnel, all that stuff. Like, that's a pretty good corner to have.
I know it is. That's the goal, is to like be the king of something that you're not even using and don't even know anything about it.
That is the goal. Just log off and someone tells you one day that you're the king. Eli Manning, thank you so much. We love having you on this show. We'll see you soon, buddy.
All right. Thanks so much.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
I meant those blackout motorized shades.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Hall of Fame son.
They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Danny Kelly's here. We're doing football. He's in Mobile, Alabama. What's going on in Mobile?
Senior Bowl time, baby. It's the official start of the draft season, I think. And so, just down here checking out some of the best seniors in the class.
Official start of the draft season is when I see a guy playing on the SEC Network on a Tuesday. Happens every year, and text you in Solak to get him on your radar. You don't listen to me, and then he's the steal of the draft. It's only happened. We're in the double digits now.
Every year. Every year. Who was last year? I can't even. I'm trying to remember.
Avante Taylor.
Yeah.
Dog. Like Alante Taylor, right?
He's got that Alante dog in Taylor. Him. Yeah.
I confused him with Avante Maddox, who was also a draft crush of mine. All right, listen. I love Mobile. It's one of my favorite places. Do you have a bar?
I mean, Veets is the place that everybody goes. Yeah. There's a place, what's the name of it? Dumbwaiter. There's a restaurant that I went to last time I was here. I haven't actually been here for the last couple of years because of the pandemic, but Dumbwaiter, good restaurant, good steaks.
My advice to younger journalists who go to the Combine, to go to the Senior Bowl, don't actually drink. The drinking is for the GMs and stuff. Well, no, you got to have some stamina here. And the mistake I always see is 25-year-old beat reporters, and they're maxing out because they see X. I'm not going to name any names. They see X, Y, and Z drinking at the bar, and they're saying, "Oh, I should do that to fit in." No, you should be nursing an Amstel Light. I should look at your Amstel Light, and I should see a quarter drunk by 3 a.m. That's how you have stamina. Because then you go up to the gym and you're like, "Hey man, what's going on? Let's connect. Let's link and build at 3 a.m. And then that's how you build relationships.
Yeah, I like that. Also, getting up early is easier when you're not getting completely wasted at night. We had to pick up our credentials by 8 o'clock today. So that was...
Yeah, because they have a scout mindset. They have a scout's mindset.
They're we're grinding. On the grind right now. Yeah,
they are grinding. Exactly. All right, I love the Senior Bowl. I love Mobile. I spent a lot of time there. I'm not there in part.
So you say.
I'm in a basement of my house. We're going to do football here, but I want to do some dad stuff. And the most dad thing happened, which is our plumber found an additional problem. And now he's working upstairs next to the office I normally record from. So now I'm in my basement and it's total chaos down here. And there's like things just thrown all over the place. There's some rock here, some stone. No
got
big deal.
Shovels behind
got some
there?
Shovels back here. This is very rustic. Yeah.
Yeah. This is very dad-like.
I'm enjoying it. We've only been in this house for a month and a half, 2 months, something like that. But the basement is dadded out at this point. And also I would say that this is the most dad thing of all time is I have vague plans to turn this into some sort of office. That would never happen though. That's the most dad part of it is it will never actually happen is you know what it would look like, but it's never actually going to happen. All right, let's start here. Early Super Bowl preview. When you thought about these two teams playing, you first thought what, Danny?
Two of the best teams in the NFL, honestly. And I think it's a shame that both of the quarterbacks are hurt or somewhat hurt, because I think this is like one of the most ideal matchups that you could come up with just based on how the season went, the two teams stylistically. So to me, it was just this feels like it's been inevitable throughout the whole year. These have been basically the two best teams in the NFL all year. And two great quarterbacks, two black quarterbacks for the first time ever, which is really cool to see. I think the storylines are great. Like, obviously, it's a bummer, like I said, that both Jalen Hurts and Patrick Mahomes are nursing injuries that could affect their performance. But overall, just awesome matchup.
We'll talk about Howie Roseman here for a second, because you and I both admire the team building aspect of it. And the more I think about him flipping the 2017 team into the 2022 team, and it's interesting, there were three players in the team who played for Andy Reid, so there's some longevity. But a lot of it is he looked at his mistakes and he figured out, and it was barely a mistake. They won the Super Bowl. I mean, like, let's not, but there got to be some team building problems 2 or 3 years ago. They took their medicine that 1 year. I mean, I remember when I called him about the Andrew Berry piece I did, and I mentioned, Andrew Berry thinks Howie Roseman's the best GM in football. And I mentioned that to Howie, and he kind of laughed and was like, did you watch this last season? And like, that's where it was just last year, last summer. And obviously they made the playoffs last year, but they progressed very quickly. But what has impressed you about his GMing work? Because I kind of think when I see a build on the fly like this, a rebuild on the fly like this, I think so much about these GMs who say we need 5 years, we need 6 years. Like, I've always been of the mind that an actual build should be proof of concept by the end of year two, unless you're completely in, unless something crazy happened and the previous GM traded away all the picks or signed the worst quarterback in the world to do some huge extension, which, by the way, the Eagles did and they recovered from it. But what has impressed you about Howie, the decision maker?
I mean, I think the holistic approach to like building a roster, I think, is the first thing that comes to mind. Obviously, like the trade for AJ Brown has turned out incredible. Signing Hassan Reddick in free agency, some of the way that they've mixed free agent pickups, like really targeted, smart free agent pickups with trades. And then, of course, doing what they're doing in the draft. Not every, GMs are not going to hit on every pick. Like, that's just not going to happen. But over time, you see that he is finding guys that can contribute and make a big impact on their team. And so, I think that's a big, really impressive thing that first comes to mind. But then, of course, obviously, the Jalen Hurts decision to draft Jalen Hurts in the second round, even though you have Carson Wentz on the roster. I think I remember at the time, there was Eagles fans and people in the media who thought it was just like wasting a second round pick on a guy because he's never going to play. It's just going to create problems in your locker room. And, time has definitely like played out well for them in terms of how it's all turned out. Obviously, Carson Wentz has kind of fallen apart. And then you have Jalen Hurts, who looks like one of the best young leaders. An incredible player who completely changes the way that you can run your offense. So there was some panning of the QB factory idea, but I think it's really panned out well for them in terms of like how why it makes sense to do it that way and why it makes sense to make that pick.
A couple of years ago, I was talking to Jeffrey Lurie about exactly what you're talking about, the QB factory thing. And he said that they didn't even call maybe he was making this up, maybe he wasn't, but he said that with regards to Foles, is they don't even call them backup quarterbacks. They call them the second quarterback because they just understand not only over the course of the season are you going to need a backup, which they have this year, but like things change very quickly at the quarterback position. Very quickly. We got into this a little bit with the Jordan Love pick, which is everybody loves the concept of best player available until somebody actually does it. And they go, whoa, not like that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
No, do best player available. Well, that is the best player available. Okay. And then they just don't like it. And then it's like the next year, it's like, we got to fill those holes. We got draft for need, baby. So I just think that when GMs are actual value hunters, people don't like it. I'll just say that.
Half the time that you do find that quote unquote value, it doesn't look like value at the time. You know what I mean? Like, no. I think a lot of people thought that was a wasted pick, but obviously now it's one of the most valuable picks any team has made in the last like 5 years, 10 years. You get a starting quarterback in the second round, in addition to what they got for trading Carson Wentz. You know what I mean? Like, this has been the part of the whole process that sometimes on the face, it doesn't look like the best value, but it turns out to be. And I think, like you mentioned, the second quarterback thing has never been more true than it has this year. Like, I think I saw the stat, there's like 68 or 65 different starting quarterbacks this year, which is an all-time record. There was like, you know, the freaking 49ers were on their fourth quarterback by the time the game ended the other week. So, you know, backup quarterbacks, I don't think it's going to be like that every year. It's just a little bit of variance this year, but like backup quarterbacks are very important. Especially, you know, in an era where if a guy hits his head on the ground during a game and goes into the concussion protocol, you're going to need a guy that come in and play. And so the paradigm has shifted in the NFL on, you know, in terms of like how many quarterbacks you should have available, how many quarterbacks you're having ready to go. Because like that is completely just changes the way that you have to like manage the game, especially at the quarterback position. So, you know, I think he was ahead of the game on that. That's not necessarily why he picked Hurts, but like now having that depth, that quarterback is so key.
Yeah. But understanding that is why you pick Hurts. That like the philosophy, which is that you always need to be taking care of the quarterback position. Like I remember, you think about college and how many programs now, the portal has changed everything, but how many programs, I remember I had a roommate who was a Georgia fan and he was like, you know, Mark Richt takes a quarterback every single year. And I'd always be like, whoa, because I'm from Florida where it's like, we'll just find some guy. We'll make the tight end a quarterback. It's fine. And so it's knowing about the quarterback position. And I would say that everybody who works for Howie, and I would also say that Bill Polian-Tree has tried to understand this as well, is just like the quarterback position needs to be settled all the time. And you need to be thinking about it all the time. And you can't get complacent. And really only the Bills and the Chiefs and the Bengals can, but even they need insurance policies. Chad Henne comes in and runs sprint right option once a year, and it's the biggest play in the biggest play of the season. So
yeah, exactly.
It's a good team building lesson, I would say.
You know, one of the most famous and funny quotes that I know that you've quoted before is like the Peyton Manning coach. I can't remember who said it. It was basically, we don't practice fucked.
Tom Moore.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that.
You unearthed it and then classic. It was repeated. No. It was repeated on The Ringer about 75 times.
Classic Kevin Clark is I just said I unearthed it when I am not the person that he said it to. I just read it in a book. Let me back up here. It was in a Ron Jaworski book. So like 2013, 2014, a couple people on Twitter had mentioned it. And then I put it in a column like 2019, 2018, something like that. It was actually around the Derek Carr injury because I don't know if you remember this. Jack Del Rio. So they put in Connor Cook and then they asked Jack Del Rio a couple months later, like, what'd you learn about this season? And he said, don't lose your starting quarterback. And I actually kind of went nuts. I'm like, what kind of leader of men is this? And we found out about Jack Del Rio within a few years about what kind of leader he was or wasn't. But I just found that to be so defeatist and terrible, that whole thing. But anyway, the Tom Moore quote, it was that Ron Jaworski and John Gruden were at a practice and they were giving all the team reps to Peyton Manning. And somebody said, either Gruden or Jaws said to Tom Moore, why don't you give any reps to, I guess it was Jim Sorgi. And Tom Moore said, because if we play the backup quarterback, we're fucked and we don't practice fucked. So...
But I think what I was going to say to that is essentially teams do practice fucked now. You know what I mean? And they prepare to it. They prepare for it because losing your quarterback, you know, and no longer, at least for sections of the season, not necessarily the whole season, you know, teams can get by now. I think that it's changed like the way that teams run offense. I mean, if you're running the Peyton Manning offense and you try and go to backup, that's maybe a little bit different. But like the way that teams have simplified some things for their quarterbacks, the way that teams have implemented like the run game, quarterback run game into things, like you can survive now a little bit more, I think, than you used to be able to with a backup quarterback. And that paradigm has shifted, I think. And I want to say something like 11 starting quarterbacks like made it all the way through the season this year. Like it was just so many injuries and in such like weird circumstances that, again, teams do have to practice fucked now.
Having said that, the Eagles started on Sunday with the same 22 they started on week one.
So well, I mean, but that's true. But they also did survive a couple of games without Jalen Hurts.
Of course, there was a journey. It was a journey. Yeah. But I'm just saying they're healthy at the right time, and they're getting Patrick Mahomes, who is at least somewhat hobbled.
I mean, he looks better, but it's high ankle sprains are not to be trifled with.
I saw Jim Nagy, the head of the Senior Bowl today, say this is the first time they don't have a first round quarterback in Mobile. Yeah. Stetson Bennett also said no in order to hang out in Dallas.
Go hang out and get rested for
a 26-year-old. He's just a kid. He's just a kid. I saw someone, I think it was Emery Hunt, just be like, do you know how inebriated you have to be
to get arrested for that?
Like, yeah. I don't know. It's been a while since I've walked around
more than when he was on Good Morning America or whatever the famous interview was.
Yeah.
Was he more drunk
Good Morning America? Yeah. I think he might have been. It's been a while since I've wandered the streets at 2 and 3 in the morning. So except for Mobile. But again, in Mobile, I'm fine. But it's been like cops, you know, they look the other way in bar districts.
You'd think. Yeah.
You would think. I've seen it. But not with Stetson, not with Big Stets. So take me through who were the best players of the Senior Bowl. What should we be watching?
Yeah, like you said, the quarterback, I think, class is, you know, it's mostly mid-rounders. There's a couple of guys that probably could move up to maybe like a day two pick, depending on how the league sees Max Duggan from TCU.
I was going to say Max Duggan. But I'll say something really quickly. I saw in the press conference today that they kept asking Max Duggan about the disaster of a national championship game.
Yeah. He handled it well. I was there.
I saw some of the quotes. I think that we need to reshape that conversation. He got to the national championship game. He got his ass kicked there. But everybody, like 95 programs, would get their ass handed to them by that Georgia team.
And no one expected this team to get there either. Yeah. You know?
So we don't have to like act like they made some huge, like, completely like program-ruining disaster. Yeah. Like this is awful. I think it's really weird the conversation coming out of TCU because they got their ass kicked.
I mean, when he went up to the podium out and Heifetz and I were like, who's going to ask him about like how long were you like pissing up blood? Like how long did the bruises, like it's like some of these questions are just brutal. No, I don't think so. But yeah, he handled it well. But there's like, obviously with Hendon Hooker is not practicing. He's going to be here to like, you know, take part in the week, but he's, I think, got a chance to be the first quarterback taken of this group.
I was like, wait a second.
I think he could be a second rounder. There's this guy, Tyson Badgett from Shepherd, who I'm very interested to watch. Like his tape, hard to come by. I've seen him a couple games, but he has 158 career passing touchdowns at D2 level. His dad is a former champion arm wrestler. So that's really fun. And so he's going to be an interesting one to watch. I don't know a ton about him. But yeah, I think he's going to be the guy to kind of like keep an eye on this year. Other than that, you know, I was looking at my big board, Osiris Torrance, guard from Florida. I think he's going to be a potential first rounder. Luke Musgrave, tight end out of Oregon State is getting some hype now. Apparently he could run like the high 4.4s. He's 6'6". He's kind of like a Mike Gesicki guy who can block a little bit more. And then defensive lineman Keon White from Georgia Tech, I think, has a chance to go in the first round. He's probably going to get a lot of buzz this week and move up a lot of draft boards. He's like 6'6", you know, 280 something. he can rush off the edge. He can go on the inside. He's got kind of like the DeForest Buckner frame. And so he, I think, is going to be a really interesting one. So those would be like the top, I think, like potential first rounders in this group.
I went to an arm wrestling contest when I was like 9 years old. It was kind of an accident in Orlando at Disney. They didn't have an ESPN zone, much to my chagrin. They had like the ESPN cafe, which was a scaled down version. And I went one time as my thing when I was nine. And there was an arm wrestling championship going on, probably broadcast on ESPN. And then I remember vividly, because it was before. So I guess, yeah, it was right after the 96 Olympics. Kurt Angle was there. But I don't know why. I don't know why he was like, he won the gold medal and everybody was like, hey, look, it's Kurt Angle. But he hadn't yet made his WWE debut. So I saw kind of in between era Kurt Angle just randomly standing at an arm wrestling competition.
This guy, Tyson Bagent's dad, says he's self-proclaimed on the Mount Rushmore of arm wrestling. So I don't know much about arm wrestling, if I'm being honest, but I watched the video of him.
I feel like you can just sort of say that.
There's not a lot
of fact checking in the arm wrestling community.
Exactly.
All right, let's do dad stuff. So how old is your little one? Are you comfortable saying your little one's name?
Calvin. Yeah, he's
okay.
He's
some people are different about privacy.
No problem.
We're not going to show our face. We're not going to show Teddy's face online. We're just going to show like little. We've got so a couple of teams that I support sent Teddy gear. And I don't really know how to take the photo where his head is not in. We're going to
put the emoji over his face.
I feel like that's tacky. I feel like that's tacky.
I mean, it is. You're right.
Yeah. So we're going to sort it out. We're going to workshop it. And by,
it's better than blurring
by March,
it.
I'm not going to blur it. I'm just going to have
do
it. Like,
do
I'm
the
blackout him.
Over the eyes. You know, like he's like in the special forces
like
or something.
Yeah, very cool. All right. So Teddy is 3 weeks. A lot of things to consider. Number one, parenting is not easy. Easier than I thought.
Oh, this is
easier
the
than
best
I thought.
Take.
I thought there'd be more unexplained crying, but the baby just tells you what's wrong, and then you just see the ball and hit the ball. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, but so, you're having success getting the baby to stop crying. Like Teddy, you can soothe Teddy. Sometimes people don't.
He's either hungry
ability.
Or he's pooped himself, and I solved that problem, and he's fine. I thought it was going to be a little more chaotic.
Oh, that's funny.
Maybe we discussed this offline, and you said to me correctly that if I was too flippant about how easy parenting is, I would get death threats.
Also, you're going to jinx yourself. Like, don't get too comfortable, because I would say the one thing you learn about parenthood is as soon as you think you have something figured out, then curveballs come. And then it's like hard, like some weird stuff happens. You can't figure out what's going on with the baby. You know, he's crying for no reason. You're asking for it, pal.
That's not actually what I want to get to. We want to do dad pieces of content. So you and I are aficionados of a very specific type of content. And I would say that we were into this before our child.
Yes.
But boy, afterwards, it really ramps up. I'm talking like Masters of the Air, those sort of World War II books, World War I, any sort of thing. And Jason Concepcion and I did a piece a couple of years ago about dad movies and the classics. We're talking Ford versus Ferrari, Master and Commander, just a classic of the genre. People kind of know it when they see it. So I wanted to get your top three dad pieces of content. Right now, recently, whatever, and we can trade places. Go ahead. Number one.
So this is one that we've talked about, but I wanted to bring it up. I'm not done yet. I'm like halfway through the first season, but Rogue Heroes.
Okay, that was my number one. Chris Ryan, not a dad, suggested that to us.
Yes.
It is created by the man who created Peaky Blinders, Stephen Knight. And then I saw the other day, this is going to resonate with you. Stephen Knight's next project is a drama, a major drama set in England in the 80s against the backdrop of the emerging ska scene.
Oh my God. Amazing.
Yeah.
That's going to be great. So, I even said to you, we were texting about Rogue Heroes, and I was like, it's basically like if Peaky Blinders
was
set in World War II, and I did not know it was the same guy that created both shows. And you were like, oh my God, it actually is Peaky Blinders. set in World War II with like, I mean,
it's the same general characters.
Right.
They just, I mean, like they're based on real people, but like
heroes, if you will.
But if you were to just draw a line between the Peaky Blinders characters and the rogue heroes. So just so everybody knows, it's about a rambunctious, off the books battalion in Northern Africa at the beginning of World War II. Winston Churchill is involved. Randolph Churchill is involved. It's the perfect mix of we're going to just root this in history, but also tell you just an absolutely crazy story and make one guy clearly be Arthur Shelby from Peaky Blinders.
Exactly.
It's the same. So it gets our highest dad recommendation at this point.
Yes.
All right. Since you took mine, I'm going to do you one better. And this is a big one. Big call, because you might throw it back in my face. All Quiet on the Western Front, the new one.
Yes.
Okay.
So I went back and read your article. There's going to be some picking of nits here, I think.
Yeah, I agree, because I said, because Jason and I decided that Saving Private Ryan was not a dad movie. I assume this is what you're referencing, because it's too violent.
Yeah.
This movie is way too violent. It's actually not as violent as Saving Private Ryan, but like it's just like kind of
same style, yeah.
Unobscured, just guys getting rolled over by a tank. We didn't love that. But as I've hardened in life, I do think that dads can get through it. The only thing I can say is that like baby and like my wife doesn't like that stuff at all, and so it wasn't like a let's gather around and watch thing. She loved Rogue Heroes, but I think All Quiet on the Western Front is a borderline dad thing. It almost gets disqualified because it is very, very violent. It's also very serious, and there's no real, I mean, like dads in general, I pointed this out in the article, they want to identify with something. They want to be able to be like, oh, I'm Ulysses S. Grant, that's me. I'm Ulysses S.
Here's what I would do. Yeah.
And yeah. And in that one, there's just not like, I guess you could be like, I'm Daniel Brühl. I'm trying to end war. But even that, a little touch
and go. I haven't seen it, but isn't it set from the German point of view too? So
yeah,
that would complicate things as an American dad.
I'd say.
In general,
dads have like five like political philosophical beliefs. Like,
don't be the Germans
in any war is one of them. Other political thing is all over the spectrum, and that one is usually pretty consistent. But I'm throwing in there because I really do think it's quite good.
I like that. I need to see that.
What's your next one?
All right, so I haven't watched many dad movies, so I'm sticking with another show, which is Slow Horses. Apple Plus. It's an amazing show. Gary Oldman. Dads love Gary Oldman. It's about the current state of MI5, MI6, and then it has some flashbacks. I know that you don't like the flashbacks when it comes to dad movies, but it has some flashbacks to the Cold War. And basically, you know, Gary Oldman is like the leader of this misfit gang of guys and girls that have gotten kicked out of like the top level of MI6 and are now sort of like sequestered away in this is Slough House, and they don't really get to do anything, but you know, they're still, you know, making things, shaking things up and, you know, settling old scores. It's really good. Gary Oldman is like the most disgusting human being imaginable in the show. Like it literally opens up with him just farting himself awake. So just great, great dad stuff. It's like the weird bastard child of Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, where, you know, instead of him being George Smiley, who's like buttoned up and like really,
yeah, of course,
you know, whatever. Gary Oldman plays like, he's really cunning and smart and savvy, which I love and which dads are going to love. He's the most competent, you know, guy, but he's also absolutely disgusting from like a personal hygiene point of view. And it just gets worse as the season goes on. I just finished season two. It's amazing.
Okay. So the streaming stuff has made dad movies A, more accessible, but B, harder to find, harder to discuss. And point being, so I was on Apple TV the other day scrolling through, because I'm just scrolling through. That's all I do now, is I just scroll through in streaming services in between changing my child. And it's like Tom Hanks's Greyhound. I just forgot I saw it. You know, like I remember he's on a boat and I'm like, did I see it? Something did I imagine I saw it?
Yeah.
And then
II,
like another one like that. So I actually quite like this movie. I don't recommend it as highly as the other ones, but like, are you familiar with the Paramount Plus movie Devotion?
I've seen the preview for it. I've not watched the movie yet though.
Okay. So it's Glenn Powell. It is Jonathan Majors and they're Korean War pilots. And I really, I've read a lot about the Korean War because David Halberstam wrote that really incredible book, really great dad book. Again, no heroes in the Korean War. So tough one. And no heroes really in David Halberstam books to begin with, unless it's the baseball ones. And even that's touching.
Yeah.
But Devotion. And so you find these movies and you're just like, what is this? And you just have to use context clues. Like Glenn Powell and Jonathan Majors are not going to do something like low budget. I will say this. And I'm sure people maybe have discovered this before. The channels that come with Amazon Fire Stick and then my TV, my Samsung TV, have you familiarized yourself with these?
Like the channels that you can subscribe through Amazon?
No. Like there's a live TV option that just gives you really cheap channels.
Yeah, I've sort of played around with this, but it's like too overwhelming. There's too many of them.
It's not good by any means, but it is so funny. There's an entire channel devoted to the show. It's what the channel is called. It's not called something else. It is called Beyond Belief Factor Fiction, and it's just episodes of Beyond Belief Factor Fiction.
that's funny.
That's like Top
that
Gear
the Star
has a channel.
Trek guy? That's Baywatch. With the Star Trek guy, right?
Yeah, Baywatch has one. I'm sure there's a Star Trek channel, but it's like the worst episodes of Star Trek because they needed to license it. ACC Digital Network is on there, and it's just replays of old ACC games. Really amazing. There's a, I want to make sure I'm right here. I think there's a Gunsmoke channel.
Oh, amazing. Over
and over again. Gunsmoke, yeah. Little bonanza. So that's where we're at with that. Got anything else? I got one more.
As long as we're on the World War II thing, I just thought of one. HBO documentary. I think it's called The Cold Blue. I'm going to double check that. But it's basically, let me double check the name here. Yeah, The Cold Blue. It's essentially
part of daddom is not really knowing the title.
You're right. I Googled it. It's there. It's basically a bunch of footage from World War II that a director or whoever took during that time. He was up writing in the B-25s in on their raids. Like he would, like him and his crew were in the bombers during these raids, and I believe some of them did not survive because obviously the you know survival rate in those raids was really not good. Maybe it wasn't the B-25, it was what are the other ones? B-17 is what they were writing in, and some of the footage is like the most insanely clear, crisp, like high quality. It's like HD footage from World War II up in these bombers. And it's like, it's really chilling. And, you know, like, I don't know what the word is. It's just like really crazy to see it in that crystal clear of footage, like what these guys were going through in World War II in these flying fortresses. And so that's another one. I think if you can handle sort of how sad it is, because obviously a lot of these guys did not make it back. Just the footage of that is really cool. So if you want to be like taken back in time to the World War II era, you know, I think that's one that's worth watching.
Couple things. Number one is when I did dad movies with Sean Fantasy and Amanda Dobbins during the pandemic, like March 2020, I think actually, they asked me what dad IP I'd like to see made in. And I mentioned that they're actually doing it. And it was the Elvis movie. A borderline dad movie. But it was actually, there's a Peter Grolnick book, a two-part book by Elvis, about Elvis, that is unbelievably good. It's, the first one is about his rise. The second is about what you could describe as his fall.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a miniseries coming. And I already mentioned the name earlier. But it is the most dad thing of all time. It's Masters of the Air, which is an incredible book by Donald Miller about the planes that you're describing and the other planes. And they're putting on an Apple TV. The budget was $250 million, which is just outrageous.
Wow. Some of the actors
stars Austin Butler from Elvis.
Oh yes.
And
this is like, there's a really good cast here. That this is gonna be interesting.
Yeah, I know.
So is this set from the American side?
Yes. Yeah,
like,
and the British.
Okay, gotcha.
And the British side. Tom Hanks is your producer. Steven Spielberg is your producer.
There we go.
This is the sequel to Band of Brothers in the Pacific.
Oh, that's cool. Okay. This is the most dad thing.
I'm gonna take leave. I'm gonna take parental leave to watch this.
Yeah.
And outsource my baby to somebody else. My neighbors can check him out. All right. Last thing. Have you discovered the lullabies on Spotify that are just rock songs?
No, I have not. That sounds amazing, though.
My guess is, if you like any sort of popular rock song or pop song, you can just put lullaby and then the song in to the Spotify search, and you can have a great time. You can have
a great time.
I was listening to the Pixies earlier today with Teddy, just the lullaby version. Pearl Jam has a great one. And what you start to realize is like how good some of the like these songs are just from a writing standpoint.
Yes.
Where it's just like, Emily, actually, my wife was playing earlier today. She was playing Weezer, and it was like, "My name is Jonas," and "Say It Ain't So." And you're just like, damn, these songs are like Mozart, bro.
Yeah.
Dude, Rufus Cuomo stuffs Mozart in a locker.
I love
Eddie
that.
Any better, just absolutely posterized Bach. That's what you learn when you listen to these things. So maybe Calvin will like it.
Absolutely. I mean, we used to go on to Disney Plus, and they had like lullabies that they made into little like movie video things. And that was like how we would get Calvin wound down for the evening and go to bed. The other thing I was going to mention, the piece of content I need to mention, and you probably don't need this because you're such a pro at soothing Teddy and he doesn't cry more than he needs to. But if you have a baby out there that you cannot get to stop crying, or you just like want to calm them down when they're freaking out, the song Misty Mountains from the Hobbit soundtrack is like this magical tool that gets a baby to like snap out of his or her, you know, crying rage. And it worked like a charm with Calvin. I mentioned it on the fantasy pod a couple of times. And I've had so many people either email or tweet at me saying that it worked like magic with their baby. I wouldn't say it's 100%. A few people have said it didn't work, but the amount of people that said this song, this particular song, is like the cure for crying is pretty incredible. So I want to share that, get that out there. You should give it a try on Teddy. It's basically like low guttural, like humming almost. And I think the babies like hear that and it's like, whoa, this is good. What is this? And so, that's like for soothing a baby. It's amazing.
Dana Kelly, Mobile awaits.
Yeah.
When I was driving from Los Angeles to St. Augustine during the pandemic, I stopped in Mobile and I was like, I'm going to show, because it was right on the way. And the classic Los Angeles to St. Augustine, Florida drive, we all know and love.
Totally.
Mobile right in there. And I was like, I'm going to show you my haunts. They were all like social distance, so they were packed and you couldn't get a table. It was Friday night and it was a different time. You know, Alabama maybe had a different attitude towards COVID than Los Angeles did. And so that was the first time we'd kind of seen that, because it was June 2020, July 2020, something like that. And I ended up at the Subway in Mobile eating.
Yes.
So nobody else had
there.
A table. Nobody else had a table. So we just housed a meatball sub, and that was the last time I was in Mobile.
I was gonna bring up the fact that one time I was here in Mobile and you just showed up to like in the hotel lobby without telling me. And you're just like, oh, hey.
I'm going to tell the story because it's actually significantly funnier than that. And you were significantly funnier than that.
Oh, okay.
Which is that it was after the Saints Rams NFC Championship game. And I wasn't flying out until Tuesday for some reason. I think it was really expensive to fly out on Monday. And so I was like, I have a full day. I'm just going to drive to Mobile and just sit in the lobby and just see a couple GMs, shake a few hands, just say hi. Because I'm a big believer in seeing people and not wanting something from them, right?
So yeah, like just saying hi.
You go and so you go up to a GM, you're just like, hey, how the kids? Good. You do like the NBA coach, like hand, like thumbs up, you know, just like, how you doing, the wave, you know what I'm talking about, like the Greg Popovich wave and thumbs up, and you just do that. So I'm like, I'm just gonna go plant some seeds in Mobile, I'll go over there. And so I didn't know you were there, and so then I ran into Derek Klassen while I was doing my seed planting, and then I just got a text from you that just said, "You sandbagging son of a bitch."
Yeah. I know, he told me that you were here, and I was like, "What the hell, man? Didn't even call me."
Yeah.
What a jerk.
That's me, bro. I move in silence.
Like lasagna. Yeah.
All right, brother. Get to Mobile.
All right.
We love you. Thanks for coming on Slow News Day. How do you feel about following up Eli Manning?
Oh, I mean, it fits perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, we may put you in front of Eli Manning.
Who's more notable today? That's amazing. Right. He's the other one. I heard you referencing a secret guest. I didn't know who it was going to be.
It was you.
Oh, okay.
No, cool. With guests who might cancel, I don't name them until they're in the seat.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
fair. You never know.
Eli. All right. Love it.
See you, buddy.
See ya.